It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, you are all over the place today, my guy. We are living that dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I am your host, Jeff Paul, coming back off the tour. Basically, our guy, award-winning sports writer for the Burlington Free Press, and our good friend, Austin Danforth. Good to see you, my man. We missed you last week.
Good to see you, too. Morning, boys. How are we?
And let's give a little mulligan to my guy, Aaron Wells, over there, our crack producer. None of the computers work in this place today. I got here this morning, and the poor guy's upstairs trying to work on some old, like, 1973 Apple computer, trying to, you know, get the dazzle draw to work so he can write up some type of format for us today, but good job with all that today, Aaron. It was a tough morning for you.
So the upstairs computer is being very, very slow, and the downstairs computer won't open certain programs for some reason.
Fun.
So I do want to make a quick update to my update.
Sure.
Because of those issues, I was not able to see the schedule for the games, sports schedule stuff.
Yeah.
The game with the Red Sox today, actually the coverage starts at 12:30, not 1:05.
Gotcha. That's the way to make the change. Good job. There it is right there. It's written right there on the big whiteboard.
But I had to write it upstairs. And I couldn't.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
I see.
And then I forgot to double check down here when I got back.
Well, so we're off to a great start as usual here on Sports
Saturday. We're here.
Yeah, let's
go. We're going.
802-655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. And we have had a lot of people join our conversations the last couple of weeks. 802-655-6672. Or you can text us, which seems to be the go-to for you people nowadays. You don't want to talk to us. Nobody wants to talk to us. You just want to text us. You can text us in the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Want to get to your golf, but I do want to say something first. I took a lot of heat last week, and Aaron can vouch for this because I mentioned
that. What did I miss?
Well, so I went camping for the first time in, like, you know, since I was probably like 21 years old. And it's been a few years since I've been 21 years old. one of my great friends from college, we have this reunion every year. And I want to say for almost like the last 7 or 8 years down at my good buddy's, he's got this beautiful cabin, which I had never seen before because I never went. There's a couple reasons why I never went. Number one, I have this show to do every Saturday, and it's a Friday Saturday event, and Arlington is kind of far away from here.
A-Town, not close.
Yeah, A-Town is not close at all. And but this year I committed myself that I was going to go. So I bought a sleeping bag, you know, the whole thing. And you know me, like, you know, I'm not a big outdoors guy. I like golf courses and things like that. But you're talking about the woods. I don't like ticks.
Controlled
I don't like
outdoors.
Snakes. I don't like mosquitoes. Right. I'm not a big fan of like the, and this is going to sound terrible, but I don't like the way you smell after a campfire. Like, I just don't like that dirty wood smell.
You're more of a house cat.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, you know, when I go camping, like, it's like a Best Western or something. That's camping for me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where there's like a heated pool and, you know. But I got to tell you, man, I had the best time. I'm going to do it again. Like, it was one of the best weekends I've had in a long time. First of all, it was great to reconnect with some great friends. But just going down there, I didn't have to use the sleeping bag. So I purchased a sleeping bag. It's a hot weather sleeping bag, so it was going to make it cool for me.
Oh.
I haven't even taken it out of the package yet. And I didn't have to because it turns out that this cabin, which is absolutely spectacular, but there was some sheer panic when I first got there, Austin, because I'd never been there before. And it's deep in the woods. Like, we're talking deep enough in the woods where my buddies, like, they bathe in the river, which will never happen with me either. Okay,
you're not big on the river shower?
No, I'm not bathing in a river. And I also will never go to the bathroom in a compost toilet. I will never do that either. Both of those things just are not fun. I don't know if you've ever seen a compost toilet before.
I have.
You've okay. Well,
I've
this
used
cat's
compost
not doing
toilet.
It.
I've used long drop toilets.
I don't know. Long drop toilet. I don't know what that is, but it sounds like something I wouldn't enjoy. See, I like to have the home court advantage when it comes to that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying?
I'm a home court guy too.
But I'm going to say that's why I will never spend 2 days there, because there's absolutely no way that I will, you know, this is disgusting to talk about, but I will never go to the bathroom
on a compost toilet. It's just not going
to
happen.
You don't want to put the shavings down the...
I don't want to deal with any of that. I don't want to know that any of the dudes that I'm hanging out with, that they've been there before me and that I'm sitting on top of that. I'm just... That's not happening. So those are two things that were not great. But this cabin was spectacular. But when I first pulled up on the landing, because we're in the middle of nowhere, look, it's like deliverance out there. You know, I mean, getting my car up there was something. And when I first got up there, the landing, it was like I saw a fire pit and I saw a large... like tent that there was like picnic tables, and I saw a bunch of cars, none that I recognized. So I think a couple of my friends from Massachusetts that came up, you know, have different automobiles from what I've seen before, because I haven't seen them in a long time. And I thought this little shack that had wood around it, I thought that was it. And I thought, oh my God, there's no way I'm sleeping in that thing. There's just no way. It looked like there was no roof on it. It was falling apart. I'm like, is this the cabin? Oh my God. And then I start thinking to myself, I'm going to lose like a whole night's sleep. I'm not going to be able to sleep. I'm going to sleep in my car. I'm never going to sleep. It's going to be crazy. But then I find out that the cabin was around the corner, Austin, this beautiful cabin. I mean, I'm telling you, like, unbelievable. And all of my friends happen to be up there working on the outhouse they're building for it. So great weekend with some amazing guys. And I will say this. You know, you don't appreciate your friends until you're not around them as much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Some of these guys I haven't seen in 6, 7, 8 years. And it was like when we reconnected together, all of us together, it was like we see each other every single day. And that's why, you know, you really appreciate close friends. As you get older, you appreciate that. When you're younger, you don't get it because there's people around you all the time. But those great friends you have for a long time, when you can reconnect, and like it's like snapping your fingers and it's back at it. It was a great weekend, and I will absolutely do the camping thing again.
There you go.
There I go. So I learned something about myself last week. So all of you people that were calling me soft and calling me kind of making me feel a little insecure about myself, I really enjoyed it. I'm now a camping guy.
By the sounds of it, also, I don't know that the people who called you soft have to issue a correction or a retraction.
No. Feel free the way you want to call me, but I'm now a camping guy. Okay. I'm that guy. I'm okay. Camping. But enough of me. How about you? Nice little weekend for you playing golf. You played pretty well.
Yeah, almost had to play 36 holes on Sunday when it was 93 degrees. Did my mic still here?
Yeah, I can hear
okay.
You.
Okay.
Is this thing on? I'm sorry.
Okay, there we are. Sorry, no. Yeah, a loss prevented me from having to play 36 on Sunday in the Proctor Pittsford Member Guest, which was always a good time. My partner happened to be a very good golfer by the name of Nick Ogila. Rode his coattails as far as I could, helped out when I could, and couldn't quite get it done in the semis. Had a lead there on the back nine. Had a chance to go one up on 15, didn't make my putt. Had a chance to, you know, try and keep it right there in 16. Didn't do what I needed to, but so it goes. And yeah, good times. Dodged all the weather that was there. It was one of the best weekends of the year, and always fun to get the competitive juices flowing. Like you got the Pierce coming up at Rutland.
Yeah, I do.
Next week.
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
It's one of the few things golf, because it's also relative. Like you're competing against whoever you're best suited to compete against. Or, you know, the way handicaps work, it's handicapped in a way to make it competitive, hopefully. Yep. And those competitive juices, when you get them going, and like all of a sudden you're grinding over a putt, you're like really in your mental process to try and do what you need to do, because hitting a non-moving golf ball is about as hard, like being able to do exactly what you want to with a ball that isn't moving is way harder than it looks.
It is. And I'll tell you what, when you're in the middle of that, and I think that's what's great for guys that now, you know, we don't have the team sports to play anymore. The ability to go play in tournaments is a lot of fun, because, you know, you have that ability to, it's like, if you bring, it brings your competitive nature back. The game is so strategic in terms of how you play it and decisions that are made. If your partner has a great shot, it allows you to loosen up a little bit, or vice versa.
If he has a bad shot, you
have to buckle down and hit something. Maybe you want to hit your driver, but instead you're going to hit an iron because you got to make sure it's in the fairway. It's a lot of fun. And I get to play with my father, which is one of my favorite weekends of the year. If I play at this great golf tournament in Rutland called the Pierce at Rutland Country Club, when I was growing up, it was one of the biggest team tournaments in New England. I mean, the players that came to that tournament in the 80s and 90s were unbelievable that came to play. It's still an unbelievable tournament today.
I think you can make a pretty strong case that, considering the lengths people go to come to play in it, even still, and the caliber of golfers that they get, and just the quality of tournament that they put on, it's probably the best tournament in Vermont, like, you know, this side of the amateur. So definitely the best team tournament.
And that does not say that I'm a great golfer, by the way. I'm not trying to paint some picture that it's like because I'm in it. But my dad is. So it's always fun to go with Matt. You know, I go for a ride in the cart.
But
you know what I mean?
The nature of that, like, you know, member guest tournaments or whatever, where you qualify based on either your handicap or your qualifying score, and you're put against teams that you should be playing against, and it should be a good match.
Well, my belief system is because my handicap they didn't want a handicap for this, I don't believe, because I didn't get asked for one. So I think what it is, we qualify on Thursday.
It's hard qualifying.
And it's straight up qualifying. So, you know, you just go out and put whatever score it is, they put you in a flight, and then, you know, you go play against those teams. But it's always a lot of fun. I got my first hole in one ever in that tournament like 3 years ago. Did I ever tell you that story?
I got my first hole.
I mean, first of all, it was the strangest thing, because if you've played at this golf course, you know, I don't know about you, but when you play golf, don't you, if you're on a tee and you're sitting next to a green that's a par three, you kind of watch the shots coming in, right? I always do that. I love it.
You're talking about 15 at Rutland, 16 tee.
Well,
I'm actually
talking 3 at Rutland, because the fourth tee is to the right of it. And that's where I got my hole in one.
Oh, I thought you said it was 15.
No, it was 3.
Oh.
And we apologize that we're talking about Rutland Country Club here in the Champlain Valley. But essentially, my whole point here of the story is that I get up and I hit a shot, and I knew it was a good shot, but, you know, and there's four players that are standing on the fourth tee, and nobody does anything.
25 yards to the right.
And I mean, they looked like they were kind of watching. I mean, who isn't? Yeah, you know, I always do. They were waiting for the next people to get out of the way on the fourth greenway. So so I hit it. They don't do anything. I'm like, oh, it's probably a really good shot, blah, blah, blah. So we get in the cart, we drive up, and somebody comes over. My dad knew. We're talking for a minute. We get up there, and I get my putter. I start walking up to the green, and there's no ball. And I'm like, oh, man, well, maybe I hit it over. Maybe it's not as good as I thought it was. So I go back and get a wedge, a couple clubs, I have to find the ball. I walk up, and as I'm walking by the hole, I kind of look, and I see a white ball in there. And I'm like, I look down, and it's my ball. And I look at my dad, and I just go, And then he's like, what? And then the guys are playing like, what? And then you know who's besides my father and the guys we're playing against? You know who the first guy was to congratulate me?
Who?
The great, I think he's a Hall of Famer. Tommy John. John drives a cart up to the green and says, did you just get a hole in one? And I said, are you Tommy John? And he said, yes, but did you just get a hole in one? I said, yeah. He goes, congratulations. See you in the bar. And then he drove away. And I was like, oh boy, maybe we got to get out of here. I'm going to owe a lot of people money. But the point is, never got a skin on it, because there were like four hole in ones on the same hole that day. That's how good the players are.
Brutal.
Exactly. So I couldn't wait. We ended up winning that match really early. We played really well. I couldn't wait to go in, because I couldn't imagine the skin I was going to win on that. And when I got in there, four other people had a hole in one on the third hole at Rutland. So maybe it wasn't that big a deal.
It's still a big deal. I played since I was 12, so over 20 years. Yeah. And I can't think of the last time I even came close to sniffing a hole in one.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite a surreal moment. But you picture a hole in one, though. Not, you know, when you get one, people go crazy. I mean, there were people watching it. I know there were. They just didn't do anything.
Well, like, so a couple parts of that green, they might not be able to see exactly where the cup is. I don't know if that was the case that day.
So, yeah, the cup was middle of the green. I don't know. Maybe you're right, but I thought I hit it over. I'm like, oh, I must hit it over. I went and got my wedge. I'm walking up. And if I didn't happen, I probably would have said, oh, I have a lost ball for a while, because I couldn't find my ball until I walked by and I was like, wait a minute, and I looked in and there it is. Unbelievable. So that was my hole. That's my hole in one story. Not that anybody cares, but that's where it was. So anyway, but we're looking forward to it. But hey, we're also excited because baseball's back, huh? Baseball started this week, which
that
is obviously very, very exciting. We're going to talk about the Red Sox. We're going to talk about Mookie Betts today. We're talking about the Yankees. But real quick, before I get into our guest next segment is not baseball related. We'll get to that in a second as well, and I want to get to the Green City Garage poll question. But one of the interesting things from opening night, the Yankees and the Nationals, one of the announcements was that Major League Baseball announced that night that they are going to have 16 teams in the playoffs this year. So you're going to have 8 teams from each side, from the American League and the National League, playing. That's pretty interesting, and that's going to make a lot of teams. It's going to bring everybody in. I would think in a 60-game season, I mean, everybody's got a shot to try to win this thing.
Like, you think about expanding it that much more in that condensed a period of time without the season to separate everybody, that's going to be nuts the second half of September.
It really is. And I will say that, you know, it does take a little pressure off you. We were talking for a little while about a 60-game season. You can't have a long losing streak. I mean, you can't have a two-week period where you only win, you know, 3 or 4 games. I mean, you really have to play well. This does allow you to have a little bit of leeway in terms of if you don't play that great, because there's 8 seeds now in each side. But if there's going to, and I, you know me with baseball purity, like I don't like changing a lot of things, but if there's a time to do it and try this stuff, I think this, I guess, is the time to do it. 60-game season, it's already discombobulated the way it is. Why not try something like 8 teams in the playoffs?
Right. Yeah, no, I think if you basically anything goes this year, and yeah, go for it.
All right, well, let's listen. Our next guest is the head women's soccer coach at UVM, Christy Huizenga. Christy is a Vermont legend. Christy LaFay, before she just got married, is the head coach at UVM right now, was an All-American at Colchester, had a great career at UConn, and obviously got some really tough news a couple weeks ago as the America East has decided to postpone their fall season. There's some potential, I think, for the spring, but we'll get into that with Christy. But it'll be an interesting interview to talk to her because, you know, Christy's a great recruiter, you know, and you have these players and these athletes that play Division I sports that are working all year long for your season, and all of a sudden your season is pulled back. It's going to be interesting to hear how that conversation went with her players, what that means going forward for her team right now. I think it's going to be an eye-opening experience to talk to her.
Yeah, you think about, like, how do you keep the team together? What stuff can you do as a team? How do you, like, manage, you know, folks' anxieties and frustrations and all, like, that's,
you know, all the unknowns, right? I mean, all, like, exactly. Hey, where are we going here? Like, what's, you know, what's going
to
happen here?
They think they can play in the spring. They don't know, like, it has yet to be worked out. You hope you can play in the spring, perhaps. So, yeah, there's a whole number of things that that make that job very tough right now.
Well, she's going to join us next segment, but I do want to get to the Green City Garage poll question. This is kind of, you know, this is nothing to do, we've talked about, we're all over the place here, but this is another cool news that I heard this week. Green City Garage, located at 49B Commerce Ave, number 5 in South Burlington, phone number 802-651-9299. That is the place to go when you have car trouble. I mean, I'm just telling you, not only is it a amazingly run place to get your car fixed, it is an incredibly clean place to get your car fixed, but they are environmentally friendly, and Chris Wallace has a tremendous job. It's the only place that we bring our cars to. I think it's the only place that my guy over here, Aaron Wells, brings his cars to, I believe. Is that correct?
That's correct. So, and I always recommend him to everybody.
Yeah, he is the best. Check him out if you have any car issues. 802-651-9299, Green City Garage, 49B Commerce Ave in South Burlington. The question today is, you can go to 1013 The Game at Twitter. This came out this week. Hey, Mike Tyson is coming back. A 54-year-old Mike Tyson is coming back. He is going to fight Roy Jones Jr. And my question today for everybody out there is, when this happens, will you get the pay-per-view to watch a 54-year-old Mike Tyson fight again? And the answer for me is absolutely, positively, yes. I think Mike Tyson coming back at 54 is unbelievable. I think Mike Tyson is the reason. I mean, the last time, for me at least, that the professional boxing world was a must-see TV was because of Mike Tyson. Whether you loved him or hated him, he was unbelievable, and the fact that he's back at it is exciting for me.
Isn't that about how old Buster Douglas was when Tyson lost to Buster Douglas?
Buster Douglas looked like it. He was 54 at that point. And if you remember, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, but I think I was like in ninth grade when that happened. I mean, when Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson, that was like, I mean, to me, that was probably the comparison of when the United States beat Russia in the 80, and I was way too young for that, the 1980 Olympics.
42-1 underdog.
Yeah, it was just unbelievable win. And Mike, if you never saw Mike Tyson fight, I mean, you had to watch quickly because he usually ended those fights in like 30 seconds, but it's going to be fun to see. Do you have something you want to add over there?
Oh, I was going to say, like, that was the whole thing going up to that fight, was that it was, like, supposed to be kind of a joke almost.
Oh, it was a joke. Yeah.
I don't think they were even supposed to fight each other until not that long before the fight. Like, there was changes and stuff that caused that matchup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to see that. All right, so go to Twitter right now. Let us know. Will you get the pay-per-view to watch Mike Tyson fight Roy Jones Jr.? We'll be right back.
The high school coach and the high school reporter who comments on that coach. How do they do a show together? It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
What a surprise. What a surprise. Austin's music makes the cut. But again, this is week 8. I sent you some music about that I like, and it still isn't coming. So, but fair enough, Aaron Wells. I get it. I understand where the favoritism comes from. I understand that he writes for the free press. I understand that he has all the awards. I understand all that.
And musical taste. In all fairness, this is a banger. Like, this is... perfect bumper music.
I don't care if I love this song. The fact is that you gave him this music, and he made it within seconds. I gave this cat music 8 weeks ago, and I forgot what I gave him. I mean, that's how long ago it was.
That's not true. I was barely able to fit in Austin's music, and they bumped up my monitor time, so I have less time to do yours, but if you remind me, I will do it on the upstairs computer.
No, I'm done reminding.
I will do it today.
I am done reminding.
I will do it today after the show.
And now when your mother texts and says, make sure he mows my lawn, I'm going to make sure I say every day, mow your mother's lawn. I'm just going to keep
I did. I mowed the lawn.
All right, good. All right. Welcome back to Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game. Maybe my music's just dumb. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe nobody's going to like it.
No, I liked it.
But I like it. You know what I'm saying? We are Sports Saturday. I am your host, Jeff Paul. My guy, Austin Danforth, to my right, and our great producer, Aaron Wells, across the way. And one of my favorite guests, we've been doing this show for a long time, one of my favorite guests, one of my favorite people, join us now on the TikTok Jewelers guest line, the head women's soccer coach at the University of Vermont, Christy Huizenga. Good morning, coach. Thank you for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, Christy, listen, normally when we have you on, we're talking about your team getting ready and getting ready to battle, the America East and potentially making a run at the tournament in the NCAA. But different year, different world, and a different season for you. So talk about what it was like when you got the news that the America East was going to postpone the fall.
Yeah, it was definitely difficult to hear. Funny, we are always talking about something exciting this time of year, aren't we? And now we're just getting ready for something different, right? Getting ready for the unknown. But yeah, it was difficult. I think in some ways it was, I don't want to say any easier for us to handle, but with the spring sports, it was like just so abrupt. Like they were literally in the middle of their season and just all of a sudden, boom, done. And I think with us, it's just been such a, it's like, I keep saying it's like we've just been slowly ripping the Band-Aid off.
Yeah.
So I think we kind of, unfortunately saw it coming. But it's always so difficult still to hear to actually hear it.
So Christy, what was the conversation like with the players? How did that go?
Everything's over Zoom now, so it's just...
Right.
I think on top of everyone being Zoomed out, it's not the greatest platform for communication, but it's what we have, and... we're working with what we have, so it's I think what we're going to do going forward starting this week is just getting some smaller groups of players together by class just to break it down a little bit so we can have a little more interaction because, as you can imagine, it's just kind of crickets. Everyone just trying to process the information. And on top of that, UVM also had rolled out very soon right before that, the stay-at-home option versus in-person option, which kind of muddied the waters a little bit as far as making a decision when you don't know if you're going to have a season or not. So it was just a lot of information, I think, for them to process in a short period of time. And so definitely, it wasn't easy, but we're going to switch gears now that the dust is sort of settling a little bit. We're going to switch gears and just focus on everything that we can do.
Christy, how much, like, before you found out for sure what was going on with the fall, how much were you trying to sort of manage your players' expectations?
Yeah, we were doing a lot of frequent check-ins and a lot of cheerleading, a lot of, like, just staying in touch, just checking in on people. I think one of the things that we found was just that everyone's situation is so different, and when you're here, it's different when they're here, too, on campus versus off campus, what class they're in, what their major is. There's so many factors, but especially when they're home, what kind of neighborhood do they live in, what are the case numbers like around where they live, everybody's family has different expectations, do they have siblings, are parks open, are they not, do they live in the woods somewhere, do they live... there's just so many factors. And so we found, like, for some people, it was very easy for them to just get out and train, and it was a release for them from all the other stresses. And then for others, it was almost like an added stress. So we just tried to really touch base with individuals, with small groups, and just stay connected and really just kind of encourage them to just exercise, to move, to touch a ball, and not to have just the stress of, you know, peaking for something in the beginning of August. And we tried to stress that early on, because it can be very stressful to really, like, train all out for something that you have an, you know, indefinite time period for.
What is this, you know, I guess lag time now, or whatever you want to call it, this, you know, this pause on what your guys' process, what does that do? Has it done developmentally for some of your kids?
Yeah, I think for our, really for everybody, it's going to present a different issue for every player. But I think it actually creates a really unique opportunity for them to just train. I think from their upbringing, like I can remember, you know, playing for Jeff and being in high school and middle school and just going out into my yard and just like bouncing a ball against the wall and trying to see how many juggles I can get. And of course, this is very basic level training compared to what they need to do to prepare themselves at the college level. But I think there's something to be said about just training and just getting yourself ready and just being the best player you can be and then letting that process unfold into taking care of itself on the field when it's time. So I think for them, it's a really unique opportunity, although it's going to be very difficult for them, especially I think with this generation and all of us, really. It's not just them, it's us included. We all want everything so fast. And to take a step back, I think it's going to be really difficult. But at the same time, especially for the freshmen, I think it presents a really awesome opportunity to just grow as an athlete and get another year of training under their belt, maybe a year, maybe 6 months of training under their belt before they're expected to compete and produce results on the field.
And don't you also think, Christy, and maybe not for a Division I athlete because it's kind of a, you know, that's a different type of athlete, but I feel like this will be an opportunity for athletes to really appreciate the sports they play. You know, we have there's so many opportunities for kids to play, and they play so many games that they don't grasp the opportunity. You know, they kind of just take it for granted, right? I mean, you know, especially in the world of soccer, I feel like you play your high school season, you play your club season, you play your indoor. I mean, you're just playing year round, and now some of that's been pulled back. Do you think it might help, you know, some athletes just to really appreciate the game and realize that you can't take it for granted, and it, you know, the time to play it is limited, and you got to take advantage of every opportunity.
For sure, yeah, exactly, and that's kind of when I was saying, you know, I can just picture myself being a young middle school, high school athlete just going out into the yard for hours. I think that's kind of a lost art now, and something that they'll definitely, it's going to be something that's learned for sure because they're not used to it, and especially fall sports, like we're almost on an island in that way too compared to the rest of the sports. Like we come in just because of the nature of the calendar, we come in August, in the beginning of August, and it's just like rapid fire. Like we get as much training and set pieces and tactics and fitness assessment as we can. We cram it all into 2 weeks. And before that 2 weeks is even up, we're already playing exhibitions and scrimmages, trying to fit the pieces together. And so it just constantly becomes this cycle of like trying to keep people healthy and not do too much during training to keep people fresh for games. And then the game comes, which is like assessment day. And then it's like this cycle. So yeah, you're right. It's a great point.
And I have to say, I'm so glad you just brought up the fact that it makes me sad to think, and I hope that players out there are listening to this interview, because if you're talking about a person that understands being great at something, it's Christy. Okay, the head coach of UVM here, who we're talking to right now, the head women's coach, Christy Huizenga, is one of, if not the greatest player to come out of Vermont. And I know people will say I'm biased because you played for us at Colchester, but the mindset you brought to the table, I hope young athletes heard or hearing what you're saying about getting in your backyard and practicing, you know, trying to find a spot that you can just get some work in. Why do you think nowadays, you said that that's kind of rare to see nowadays. Why do you think that is?
It's like a dilemma, right? We talk about it all the time, and I think you've seen some of the leagues, the development academy that, you know, they started on the boys' side, and then they started on the girls' side, and they're just, ECNL, they're constantly, these are the top leagues,
yeah.
And they're constantly sort of, like, tweaking the rules and trying to figure out, like, okay, like, what's the practice-to-game ratio? U.S. Soccer has its best practices document for that ratio, and I think they're constantly trying to tweak it, but I just think there's so many more, right? we're a capitalist society. There's so many leagues, and there's always a buck in it for somebody. So people are always starting these leagues trying to earn their buck, and so everyone jumps to one league, and they jump to another league, and then you've got this all this anxiety from families around college and how are we going to pay for college and how many scholarships are out there, and so they get, you know, forced into the sort of the shuffle of all these tournaments and the volume of it. Just how can we get seen? How can we get exposure? And I think it just kind of keeps perpetuating. And yeah, it's unfortunate. When we talk about just the raw game itself, it's probably not what's best, all the volume of all these games. So I think it's definitely not something they're used to, but I think it's a great opportunity and a great life lesson to just go through that process of putting in the work and being okay with being in that process and letting the process speak for itself.
Christy, last question for you. You're not going to have games to coach as you planned on this fall. What are you going to hope to get out of this fall as a coach that you might not have otherwise with the time you didn't plan to have?
I think a little bit back to what we were talking about earlier with typically only having 2 weeks to prepare. Our freshmen just come in like they're deer in a headlight sometimes with just all the information and all the things that they have to learn in such a short period of time. I'm hopeful that if we do have a spring, that we'll have that much time just to practice and to train and to get people acclimated, and for our freshmen to, you know, grow physically, get accustomed to our system, that when it is time to compete, we'll be a much more whole product.
Christy, before I let you go, though, that was going to be your last question, but we just got a question for you on the Town Fair Tire text line from Arnie's wife, Beth, who asked, and I didn't even realize this was happening, so maybe you can give us some insight. What does she think of, what do you think of the new league that Serena Williams is starting for female soccer players?
Oh, Serena's amazing. Our team loves Serena. We always reference Serena. She's just such a great role model. For all athletes, but in particular for female athletes, and I appreciate the fact that she, you know, that she speaks up and uses her voice, and I think it's amazing. It's amazing what she's doing, and I mean, talk about someone to get in touch with. You guys should try to get in touch with her.
Yeah, I'm sure Serena will.
Easy get.
Top of the list is to get on this Sports Saturday show in Burlington, Vermont. Christy, listen, we are lucky to have you still in our community. And if any young player, whether you're male or female, is looking for any guidance, the head coach of UVM is the one you go to. Christy Huizenga, thanks so much for the time. We'll talk to you again down the road.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a good rest of your day.
All right. I'll tell you, you know, I had one year with her, my first year at Colchester in 01, so there wasn't much coaching on my end. I just kind of sat back and watched one of the greatest players, one of the greatest athletes, and one of the greatest mindsets that I've ever been around do her thing. And to see where she's come and where she is today, it's not surprising, you know, but to see what she's doing and what she's doing for UVM. And like I said, I mean, we are blessed to have her still in this community. Because when she left for UConn in 2001, I thought, you know, she's going to be, you know, she'll be at some other part of the country. But she's home and she's coaching the hometown team.
Yeah. And
say it.
Top two, three, four players ever in Vermont history.
No,
easy.
Bar none.
I mean, she went and played for a national powerhouse UConn team and played a lot for them. And that's no small feat. We're like her, Jen Carlson, Lauren Bernard. Who else are we talking about in that conversation? There aren't many names.
There aren't. And more impressive than her ability was her mindset. I think not only was she great, her mindset.
You don't get to that level without that mindset.
You never do. So. All right, take a quick break when we come back. Hey, Red Sox fans, on Monday and Tuesday, there's a lot of excitement that Mookie's going to come back next year. Not happening. We talk about that next.
Bringing you another day closer to game day. It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
I think just being here, the time that I've been here, the people here made me feel so comfortable. You know, like I said, the talent up all up and down. The minor leagues, the front office, everybody in the front office from the owner on down. I mean, everybody's amazing. You know, I think this organization is a well-oiled machine, and, you know, I love it. And I'm super, super excited to be a part of it for the next 12, 13 years, however many years it is. And, I mean, like I said, got to bring some rings back to LA for sure.
12 years, $365 million, plus a $65 million signing bonus. Yes, Mookie, I can see why you like the Los Angeles Dodgers. That's Reds, former Red Sox great Mookie Betts, who this week just signed a 12-year, unbelievable $365 million contract, plus a $65 million signing bonus. So I can see why Mookie likes out west.
I'd have taken a $65 signing bonus to join the Free Preds.
I think you paid them $65 to join the Free Preds.
I had to pay for parking. I didn't know they validated.
Exactly. Yeah, interesting this whole week, and you are joining us back here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Jeff Paul, Austin Danforth, and Aaron Wells joining you today, and thank you for taking the time this morning to listen to us and join our conversation. But there was a lot of talk early in the week, I noticed, on social media, that Red Sox fans, I think, had this feeling, and I think the feeling was even here in this studio during the week with the huddle, that Mookie was kind of like just hanging out in Los Angeles for a year, going to play these 60 games, and then was going to come back to Boston and sign the big contract with the Red Sox, come back home where the dirty water is. And by the way, let me just say something about my boy over here, Aaron Wells, and more music issues. Okay, I asked him, as a producer, I said, hey, man, how about when we come back, we'll play that Dirty Water song, which we play almost weekly, but all of a sudden it's missing now. Today it's missing. Because I wanted to play it today just to give those Red Sox fans a little jab this morning, a little Yankee jab that Mookie Betts isn't coming back. All of a sudden Aaron Wells can't find the music.
But no big deal.
But we found Austin's music. That's good. Make sure we get that.
I don't think
control.
We've played it since I've been here.
Oh, that's a lie. That's fake news.
I found it in one place in the system, and there's no actual song in the spot. It just says Dirty Water, and then nothing plays.
Well, next week I'm sure it'll be playing three times. I can't wait for you. Tell me you found it next week.
I just liked your restraint. You didn't pivot from former Red Sox great and future Dodger legend Mookie Betts.
Well,
twist the nut.
But let me help you out, Red Sox fans, and just tell you that you should be taking a big sigh of relief that your organization did not waste their money like this on Mookie Betts. Because I'm just going to say this, and I don't mind saying it publicly. Mookie Betts is a good player. He is not an elite player. He had a year where they all had big years, the year they won the World Series. Was he the MVP the year they won the World Series?
Yeah.
Okay. The year after that, he wasn't that. The year after that, he wasn't that. I'm just telling you right now, when it's all said and done, Mookie Betts is not that kind of a difference maker. He is not that kind of guy. And a contract like that in Boston would have been a bad thing for the Red Sox. If you're a Red Sox fan today, like I know you two guys are, you should feel good about this.
Aaron, are you saving this sound so we can bring it back when Betts has an MVP or two?
He won't.
And the Dodgers have won a World Series or two?
He won't.
And then we can just hang it over.
He will not
Jeff's
have
head,
another. He will not have another
his neck.
He won't.
I'm quite confident there will be a graphic with Jeff's quote.
Can't wait
floating
to see
around
it
on our Twitter account,
and you'll love it. And everyone will be like, you know, Jeff, you were right again.
You're going to bookmark it.
He will not have another MVP season. And the Dodgers are in their window now. If they don't win it this year, I don't know. I mean, if they win a World Series, this will be one. It'll be maybe one, maybe this year, even though I think the Yankees are better than they are, but we'll see.
You look at what Mookie Betts has done so far in his career, everything built towards that MVP year. Last year was the outlier. I would be more surprised if he doesn't win another MVP than if he does.
No, I won't.
Especially
be
with how much was up in the air in his career last year. Like, as a player, I think that can get into your head, too, knowing that...
On a team that's scuffling, and like now you're pressing... And it's not happening, and it's just compounding.
Then you're not paying somebody $365 million if you can't pick your team up and carry them on your back. That's the point. I mean, Mookie Betts hit these numbers when J.D. Martinez was matching him number for number. And when the shortstop was having a huge year, and the third baseman was having a huge year, and Mitch Moreland had almost 300. And you go through that whole roster. The Red Sox had like one of the most iconic, all those guys. Now, I mean, were they cheating? I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's something going on there. I mean, you know, I'm just saying. But at the end of the day, I'm telling you, this contract would have been detrimental to the Red Sox. And I think Brady had a comment that and we can play it if you want, but go ahead and play Brady's comment about Bloom.
He sees the situation. They got to get under the luxury tax. They're not going to be competitive. He sees the writing on the wall
pitching
here.
Staff, yes.
We know they weren't going to be very good this year.
Right.
So he says, we got to move Mookie, get what we can for him, and then hopefully we'll see what happens in free agency when we've cleared some money off.
I mean,
but at the very least, they go get
Mookie. But and again, like Bloom, what did Bloom do? I mean, yeah, he got a couple of prospects. That's fine. But, I mean, we're going to find out. I mean, the reality is if these prospects pan out, then great. But, you didn't bring in a Gleyber Torres. You know, you didn't bring in a kid that, you know, you didn't bring in a Moncada, like the kid that you gave up for Chris Sale in Chicago. You got a couple guys that are, okay, we'll see. Maybe top of the line or maybe one of the top guys in their system. But if you know what's going on in Los Angeles, they've been spending money like the Yankees did with George Steinbrenner back in the late 80s, trying to win these championships. Now, I'm not saying Mookie Betts isn't a great player, and I'm not saying that he, you know, could he win an MVP? Sure, he's capable. I mean, he's won an MVP before in a league that I think is more competitive than the other one. I think the American League, it's harder to win an MVP in the American League than the National League. It just, with the amount of, with the DH in there, I mean, it's just, it's harder to do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, if you look at what Mookie did the year that he won the MVP, look who was around him. Now, could I be proven wrong? Sure, it's just my opinion. But last year was a perfect example to me of that. He's going to be a good player, but I don't think he's the guy you can put. He's not going to put the organization on his back. And the Dodgers' window is right now. So to think that this thing, 12 years of this, I mean, for the Dodgers and whatever, their organization, they're going for it. They have to. Their fans are just freaking out, I'm sure. But I think if you're the Red Sox, you got to be, yeah, listen, whatever, get your money, good for you. But I don't think it's going to pan out.
I'm not sticking up for the Red Sox. I think it's pretty clear from the body of work that he had had, even including the crummy 2019, he was as close to a generational talent as you're going to get in an organization. And you can't let those guys go because they come around once in a generation.
Well, then what are the Red Sox doing then? Like that's another – what are they doing?
This is where you can't stick up for the Red Sox, but you can point out that the timing of his crummy year – was the absolute worst possible time for the Red Sox. You know, he's coming off an MVP year, the year before his contract year, and he lays an egg. Compared to, you know, the heights of 2018, he lays an egg, and now the Red Sox have to decide, can we afford that? And them thinking they can afford it or whether they can, I think they could have. I don't think that's going to ruin them.
No, but I agree.
Apparently, like, if there's calculations, they have to go into the luxury tax, and that could have hamstrung them. That's a different thing. But if he'd had a better 2019, even 10% better, then probably he's going to be a Red Sox for life. But he just didn't, and it complicated the matter that much more. And so they flipped the coin that, yep, maybe he's not going to be the 2018 Mookie forever. Maybe he's going to be somewhere between, and that's not worth $350. If it turns out that he's closer to 2018 than 2019 for the next 5, 6, 7, 10 years, the Red Sox screwed up, but we will only know, you know, 5, 6 years.
The Red Sox screwed up when they hired Dave Dombrowski, and I said this on this show the day that he announced. I said when he leaves the Boston Red Sox, they'll be the Detroit Tigers. That's what they're going to be. They might win a championship. They're going to be very relevant. He's going to do all these. He's going to bring players in.
Tigers with a World Series.
Tigers not with winning a World Series.
No, he did.
No. You won a World Series. Yeah, but I'm saying when he left your organization, and the Tigers were in World Series, they were one of the best teams in baseball for a few years. They never won it.
That's the difference.
But they were relevant. But so again, he won a championship, but he left the team in a situation where the Boston Red Sox now, we're not talking about the Kansas City Royals. We're not talking about the Tampa Rays. We're talking about an organization that is in the same level as the New York Yankees, the Chicago Cubs. You know, who else is that? I mean, the Reds, there's three organizations, right? I mean, there's maybe two, the Yankees and the Red Sox, okay? That the generational talent that you believe Mookie Betts is, and maybe he is, my opinion is, he's not worth this contract. The Red Sox would be better in the long run without doing this. But if he is the next guy that in the beginning of his prime, the Red Sox allow him to sign, they trade him for a couple guys that you don't even, at least when the Yankees traded Miller and Chapman in the year that the Cubs won, they got bad guys that you knew were going to be players. I mean, they were highly touted, big time guys that you at least knew that Gleyber Torres was not going to miss. Clint Frazier may not be the superstar I think is, but he's going to bring something back if they decide to trade him. And Clint Frazier still may be a stud. These are guys that are going to be something. You brought back two guys you know nothing of. These guys are not that level. So Mookie Betts, your guy from your organization, MVP, World Series just a couple years ago, is now signing a deal like this with the Dodgers in the same breath as the Red Sox. It can't happen.
The Red Sox put themselves over that barrel where they had
with
no,
Dombrowski.
Where, like, with
Dombrowski's mentality.
But they put themselves over the barrel with Mookie in particular, where they were sort of just holding him out there with no legs to stand on. You know, and like, so all of a sudden, yeah, who's going to give you like really choice talent
that
for
tells
that
you
guy that you want to offload.
Right, then you're agreeing with me.
Then, like, I'm agreeing. Like, right there, like, they postured themselves as such that they couldn't offload him and get the maximum value.
And tell me how the Red Sox couldn't still do this. Like, tell me how they were a year away, they were a year off from winning a championship. I mean, they were just a year out from that. How can you tell me you can't bring Mookie back? I mean, I don't understand it. Why don't you? I mean, seriously, you're the Boston Red Sox, but that's Dave Dombrowski. His decision-making did this to the Boston Red Sox.
Well, probably because they're looking at their situation when they're trying to figure out how they're going to sign Mookie. And if they want to have any chance at winning, they are going to have to go get pitching, a lot of pitching, because that rotation was a dumpster fire. They've already got some guys locked up off of their rookie deals in Devers, and they got Bogarts on a contract, too. So... do they need to go sign Mookie for huge money and not get pitching?
So was it worth? So then I'm going to go back to the Dombrowski because that's what it comes down to. So was it worth it? As you're both Red Sox fans, and you are, you're kind of a passive Red Sox fan, Aaron, and you are one of those I come in late Red Sox fans.
I'm here when it's interesting,
right? But my point is, was it worth it? Was the championship that they got two years ago worth
right now?
Right now it is, but is it going to be worth if they're not good? I mean, this year's. Let's just throw this year out. I mean, because there's eight teams going to get in at 60 games. We'll see. But if next year, they're not competitive, the year after that, they're not competitive, the year after that, they're not competitive. The whole point of being a fan, what you're looking for, this is why I used to debate people that say the Yankees spend too much money. Maybe they do, but at least they're relevant for their fans. Because again, you forget, this is for our entertainment, right? We're looking to be entertained. We want to be entertained. We want to watch a good team. Is that championship worth the rebuild that's obviously happening right now in Fenway Park? Is it worth it? And I don't think it is.
The funny thing, and I think we got to get out here soon.
Probably, yes.
You think about the group that owns the Red Sox.
Mm-hmm.
They had a great team on this side of the Atlantic. They bought into Liverpool. They've developed a juggernaut over there. They're probably happy on one side or the other. So right now, they probably, I mean, not that they don't care about the Red Sox, but if they focus a little more on Liverpool, like, doesn't really bum them out.
That's pretty interesting. But I would love to know from a diehard Red Sox fan right now, and you can give us a text on the Town Fair Tire text line. You can call us anytime you want. All right, is it worth it? I mean, is what's happening in Boston right now worth it? Now, maybe they're going to shock us this year and you're going to forget about it. They're going to be okay. But if this is a rebuild in Boston, it takes a long time to rebuild in baseball sometimes, especially when your farm system stinks. And that's what Boston's is right now. Is it worth it?
I think because there's still offensive pieces on the team that are exciting and some of them are still pretty young, it feels like maybe there's still a chance, so it still feels worth it. If that never pans out, then we'll feel differently, I'm sure.
Yeah.
As long as they play Baltimore, you're fine.
Hey.
Every game. We'll be right back.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right, kiddo, what do you got today?
All right. So, what the hell? All right. Bear bashes down the door of a cabin for an incredible entrance.
Oh, boy.
A bear in the Lake Tahoe area made an entrance worthy of the Kool-Aid Man when it burst through the door of a cabin during a hunt for food. Footage from the cabin shows the door busting open with parts of the frame flying off. The bear then uses a paw to steady the door and marches in to sniff around. The bear sat by the door until authorities came and removed it. So he just, like, busted through the door and then decided to sit there for a while.
That's a bold bear.
The bear's fate is unclear. They are often relocated but are sometimes euthanized depending on their history.
Well, I hope that they were able to move him. I'll tell you, my mother-in-law, they has bears around her house up in the Bangor, Maine area, and he comes out.
Black bear country.
A black bear, yeah, exactly. Yep. And one day he wouldn't leave. She's trying to, like, spook him to get out of there. She took the hose and started to spray him. He just laid in his back and just got a bath. Like, he wouldn't leave. She was like, it's like a dog.
That's a cool customer.
Yeah, that's some bear. That bear likes people. I was like, that's kind of a little dangerous. But yeah, the bear's fine. Doesn't bother him. You know.
Well, and so that's, I think, in some parts of the state now, they, like, folks are a little more on alert because of the composting thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you gotta be a little more vigilant, a little more alert.
Yeah.
I saw, speaking of bears, on Facebook, there was some, like, viral video of, like, I forget, it was probably out west somewhere where, like, a black bear was, like, on its hind legs, like, sniffing around a person.
I saw that, and like, she's taking a selfie.
Well, she was, but, like, I think they just kind of had to stand still because this bear was like all over her. It didn't like, thankfully didn't maul her, but like was sort of like sniffing.
Put his arms like, around her, stood up next to her. Like, and like, then at one point it clawed her leg,
like,
right?
Yeah, like, a little playful like.
Yeah, no way, man. Whew. Yeah. You know, to this day, I've lived in Vermont my whole life. I've never seen a bear like live, like in the wild.
I've seen a few.
Not once.
Meanwhile, so that.
So I don't know what happens in the woods.
This woman
I mean?
In that video was like keeping it cool with the bear right there. Meanwhile, I was running in my neighborhood a couple weeks ago. Chihuahua bolts out of a yard, runs around the corner after me for like 100 yards. I am running as fast as I can to get away from this damn Chihuahua, nipping at my ankles. And I think I finally outran it because it just backed off. But like, I don't know where it came from. I'd never seen it before.
Oh, my God. I wish somebody videotaped that. That would have been hilarious. That would have been pretty to see. And I'm sure the sound you were making was like, get away. Stop.
I was just getting into my run, and I was trying to ease into it, and all of a sudden, I have to go into, like, fifth gear, and that was not fun.
Oh, my God. To see a chihuahua chasing Austin down the road, I'd pay good money to see that.
It wasn't much bigger than my sneaker, and it was
ferocious. Dog's ferocious. All right, sports update time.
Now back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
And the pitch is swung on and hit high in the air to left center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Away back in the left center field seats. A Stantonian home run. Giancarlo Nocipostopalo. Oh, what a shot by Stanton. It's a two-run dinger, and the Yankees immediately take a 2-0 lead.
And summer has immediately begun for me because it doesn't count until I hear John Sterling's home run call. So great to hear that the other night. The Yankees opened up their season with a 4-1 win over the reigning world champions. It was six innings. It was shortened because of a terrible storm that came through Washington. But a good night if you're a Yankee fan. And I know that people get frustrated with John Sterling, but I will just caution people to this. When these legends decide to retire, and eventually it'll happen, you know, I on social media, I see a lot of times people going after Dick Vitale. I see people going after John Sterling. I see, you know, the old guard. When these voices are gone, they're gone. And so don't rush that stuff away. Even if you're a Sox fan, I know how annoying it is for you to hear that. But it's like Joe Castiglione, as a Yankee fan, listening to Joe Castiglione call a game. Like, I can't imagine not hearing his voice on Red Sox, you know, or Jerry Remy. You know, I'm not a Red Sox guy, but not having Jerry Remy on Nesson will be very difficult when that's gone. And I can go back to when Phil Rizzuto called Yankee games on WPAX when I was growing up. When these voices are gone, they're gone forever. And I know that social media has given us an opportunity and given people up through to kind of get, you know, kind of when they're frustrated or they're mad, we just react out there and we just put this stuff out there. We put this venom out there. Just remember, when the voices are gone, they're gone forever. And these are legendary voices that have meant so much to so many, and they bring so many things back to you when you grow up, when you get a little older. Like, I listened to Jack Healy's voice in Rutland, George Como's voice up here, even Rich Haskell's voice. You know, I mean, they mean something because they're a part of the culture that we've grown up in and the community we've grown up in. So it was good to finally hear a John Sterling home run call, Austin, and in a Yankees opening season win. It was a nice day if you're a Yankee fan.
Giancarlo, no si so stupendo.
The fact that you can even play that, I can't even say those words. So that's, you know. Do I need to make, and by the way, this is Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game. I did want to get into some Yankee talk.
I know what you're saying about the different announcers, and like, yeah, you do miss some elements of them, but like John Sterling's shtick takes away from big moments for me. Like, he's just a comedy vehicle. Like, there's no. Like,
I disagree.
It's a parody of himself where it like, it is high, it is far, it is caught.
No, that happened last year. I was coming from soccer practice
in
the playoffs with Houston, and Didi Gregorius, it sounded like it just given them the lead in the seventh in game three, I think, of the ALCS. And it was a catch like, on the warning like, track. This part depressing.
The Yankees win like after like week two. Like, they win their eighth game. Sounds like they won their
160. No, I get what you're saying.
Yankees.
I know. I get what you're saying. But at the but you, But that's part of what the summer is, right? Like, you're laughing about, you're joking about it, but when that's gone, it's gone forever. And that's the thing. And a guy, I get it. Like, he can be, even Yankee fans are annoyed by him. I get that. But to me, he's the voice of summer. And you know, growing up, that's what you heard. And now, like, when, and don't tell me that you don't wait to hear. If the Yankees sign somebody new, everybody cannot wait to hear what he comes up with the home run call. Nobody can wait.
Just, I mean, to see how bad it's going to be.
Doesn't matter. The point is that's part of, that makes the game a little bit of fun. And it was good to hear. But let's get into the Yankees a little bit here. 655-6672 is the number to call. You want to talk Yanks with us, or you talk anything with us. I mean, we're here for you. You know what I mean? 802-655-6672. You can text us in the Town Fair Tire text line. Same number, 802-655-6672. Adam from Wilson just said, I'm out of my mind about Mookie Betts, but he wants to hear more of my Daniel Jones hot takes. Yeah, okay, Adam, I got you. All my hot takes will be right. I'm just saying, I can't wait for them to be right, because you and I are going to have a conversation. I'm going to have you call in sometime, but we appreciate the text. I don't think the season can start any better for the Yankees. You go on the road to go against Max Scherzer. First inning, you have Aaron Judge, gets his first at bat, he gets a hit, and then Giancarlo Stanton hits a bomb. And if you didn't see it, that was a bomb he hit. The Yankees have that's just my phone, guys. I apologize.
Oh, so, I thought we had wind chimes in here. I thought there was a breeze.
Nice, right? It's pretty nice. The Yankees take a quick 2-0 lead. Bottom of the first inning, Garrett Cole comes out his first time in a regular season game with the Yankees, gives up the home run to Adam Eaton. It's 2-1. You're thinking, wow, Scherzer and Cole, they've given up two, each of them give up a home run the first inning. And then all of a sudden, Scherzer settles down. He strikes out well. I think he's had like 12 to 13 strikeouts in the game in just 5.5 innings. And then on the other side of the spectrum, Cole basically settles down. He gives up no more hits during that game. And the Yankees win the game 4-1 in a rain-shortened game. But another bright spot for the Yankees in that game, besides the Stanton home run, was that Stanton had a big 2-RBI single in that, is where we went the other way.
Oh.
And I thought Alex Rodriguez Alex is Alex, but one of the things he said was he felt that this is a perfect season for Giancarlo because there will be nobody in the stands. So the fact that there's not going to be anybody in New York, and look, Yankee, and Yankee fans, any team's fans, but especially Yankee fans, Red Sox fans, if you sign a big contract and come to town and you don't perform, you have a big problem.
Right.
And Giancarlo was getting booed viciously in New York. And this might be a way for him, if he does have a big 60 games and they go far and potentially win a World Series, that if he has any kind of season, when he is struggling, there won't be that pressure won't be behind him. This might make him a better Yankee. I mean, you look at the big names that have come to New York. I see where Alex is going with this. I mean, it was tough for him. It was tough for Tino Martinez. It was, name him.
The damn Tino,
I mean, these guys struggle coming in. This might help Austin Giancarlo Stanton have a big year if when he does struggle or when he does strike out in a big situation, the boo birds aren't behind him.
I agree with that. I think that's pretty, like, to sort of play in a little more sterile environment, for a guy that was trying to find a foothold is going to be huge. More importantly, I want to know, I saw like my guy Alex Abrami at the Free Press.
Yeah.
He and the family, they celebrated opening night with some takeout. What did you do to celebrate opening night, the return of the Yankees to your life?
It's funny. I took half the day off. I played a round of golf. And then I got home right as the first pitch happened, and I was able to there was nothing special. I just kind of got on the couch and put it on and
crack a cold one?
No, there was none of that. I just kind of, actually, I cracked the seltzer water because okay. I was a little thirsty. It was hot out there that day. And I it's just good to see baseball again. And the other thing about it was I kind of like that they're pumping in the crowd noise a little bit. I'm sure it's weird if you're at the game, like, and there's no crowd, but there's crowd noise. But on TV, it plays well, I think.
Yeah.
So it was, it was fun to watch it. I mean, I'm just glad that we have the sports back. I'm just glad that we have the baseball back to watch. And as a Yankee fan, I think you take away a lot of things here. I mean, you saw some depth out of their roster. Obviously, LeMahieu, who had COVID early in the preseason or whatever we called that, they just had the last month, is back. But he only had, I think, one or two games under his belt, so he hasn't had a lot of time. Mm-hmm. You saw Tyler Wade come in and really contribute a lot in that game. I believe he scored, I want to say he scored one or two runs, had a big bunt base hit, scored from first base on a Judge double. Aaron Judge had two hits, two really big hits, which is good to see off Max Scherzer. I think there's concern with Judge, obviously, with him staying healthy, but Judge struggles against power pitchers at times, and it was good to see him not struggle in that situation. And obviously, Gerrit Cole, it is always difficult when you sign a contract like Gerrit Cole signed to live up to that, especially when you're in New York, and to go into Washington where, again, look, there's no crowd. So that's a difference. That's a real difference to walk on a field. You walk into the Nationals Park the first game, you know, of the season, and the crowd's in there, and you're putting, you know, you're getting your rings and you're putting up the flag for winning the World Series. That's going to be a rabid crowd. But I thought Gerrit Cole showed a lot the other day, giving up the home run early to Eaton after the Yankees gave him a 2-0 lead and then basically one hit them the rest of the way. And he was rolling. I mean, the rains came, he was rolling. So I think you would have seen 7 or 8 innings out of him in that game if there was no weather. So I think there's a lot to like if you're a Yankee fan right now. I mean, you got to feel good about it. And you know, their depth is so good, and they got young arms that they can bring in. It's going to be interesting to see how they play out. I mean, and again, it's one game. You don't get too worked up or not, but I thought to see Stanton get some big hits, to see Judge get some big hits, to see the depth, and to see Gerrit Cole really be an ace, which the Yankees haven't had in a long time, makes you feel good. But there's the next 59 games. You know?
Yeah, and I mean, how do you think they'll fare in the Buffalo air when they have to play the Blue Jays?
Yeah, that's interesting, right? So I think the last game played in Buffalo was when Roy Hobbs hit the big home run in the Natural. You know, I think that's the last time they played in Buffalo. But yeah, I think the Blue Jays are a great team. I think the Blue Jays are going to be a tough team to handle. They got all those young athletes, those young hitters. Tampa Bay, I mean, I think Buster only picked Tampa Bay to win everything, I think. So they're obviously going to be right there. I think the Red Sox, we talked earlier, with their lineup is going to be really, really difficult. But their pitching staff is, you know, obviously Evaldi looked really good last night, but we know Baltimore is literally, I mean, what's going on with the Orioles? I mean, my goodness, you know. So it's the point here is this. It's 60 games. It's 59 games now. So there is no room for any struggling. You have to play well. So it's going to be fun to watch these teams play because they're going to grind these games out. There's none of these like, we lost 5 games in a row in April, big deal. You lose 5 games in a row now and going into August, like you're in trouble.
So on the topic of the Orioles, I'll tease what we're going to get into next segment.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But great rule that the Orioles fans would benefit from. If you own a team that finishes last 3 or more years in a row, you and your family must divest entirely and the team stays put. And not only that, you take it a step further. This is from the New York Times. Just a thought piece they did. If they can have a salary cap, you can have a concession cap too. So if you're not winning, the prices of stuff can't go up.
Yeah, so I guess my next question would be, would you rather have a good team or really cheap hot dogs and beers?
The latter.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You get to a point in your life where you're like, yeah, keep stinking. I can go there and feed my family for like $7. That's, I got a family of 6.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's a good thing, yeah. We'll get into that. That was an interesting article, so we're kind of like getting ahead of ourselves. But next thing, we're going to talk about this New York Times article that Austin sent me that's basically about, since all of these sports have been, you know, basically in limbo for the last 4 or 5 months, it's a time. This writer was talking about maybe it's time to look at each sport and to tweak it to make it better for fans or make it better, whatever. And he had some opinions on some things. So we're going to break that down next. So that'll be very interesting. But yeah, if you're the Orioles, I mean, would you rather have a good team or cheap, some Boog's Barbecue that's, you know, that's under $15?
Well, after 3 years, it wouldn't matter because it'd be a new ownership group and you'd be changing things up.
Yeah. I will say one of the best ballparks I've ever been to is Camden Yards. I don't know if you've been down to that yet, but that is an unbelievable
ballpark. I've never been there. I've driven outside it a couple times when I lived down that way for a couple years. And like, we're going on close to 30 years at that ballpark, and it's still arguably like one of the most photogenic spots in Major League Baseball.
And one of the neatest bars outside there is called J. Paul's, which I like. Yeah, when we went there, I must have bought like 70 T-shirts, all kinds of glasses that had my name. I brought everyone for everybody. J. Paul's is what it's called. I love that place. But yeah, there was one ballpark. There's two ballparks I would love to visit. I haven't been to yet. I haven't been to the Pirates Stadium in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
That looks really neat.
Right on the river.
Right on the river. And you kind of walk over that bridge, that big yellow. I'd love to go there. And then I'd love to go to Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. I would love to see that.
Mm.
And I'd like to go to the, where the Giants play in San Francisco. That looks like a really neat park.
Is that Comerica?
Comerica's in Chicago.
AT&T.
AT&T. Yeah, those are some ballparks I'd love to visit. Obviously, it's not going to happen this year, but I'd love to see those eventually. But yeah, so Yankees look strong. Red Sox yesterday, man. I mean, look, they scored a lot of runs. They beat a really bad team. And what's going on with those tents on this in Fenway Park? Like, it looks like, did you happen to see the game last night? So it looks like near the dugouts, they look like party tents. It's weird. Anybody know what that is? What's going on there? Did you see that, Aaron?
I think they had them at the Yankees game too, the opener. I believe what they are is they're extra areas for players to hang out so that they can separate more. They extend past the end of the dugout.
I see. Okay, I didn't realize that.
That would have been my guess.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, I don't know. I guess I can't create sense. So I don't know. I was like, what's going on? They have like little party areas there now. What's going on with that? You're gonna want those seats.
You're gonna have a little cookout.
Matt from Burlington just texted here on the Town Fair Tire text line, and you can too. Or call us at 655-6672. He said, I agree, Jeff. I hate the Yankees, but that's part of baseball. White Sox announcer is the same way. He's talking about Hawk Harrelson, who is a huge homer.
Oh, yeah.
But I agree, losing his voice would be unbelievable. You appreciate it. It's better than the goofy guy talking about his daughter's volleyball game no one cares about. So, yeah, I mean, there are legendary voices in this game that if you don't root for your for the particular team, it could just drive you crazy. I get all that. I think Tommy Heinsohn is a good example of that. Who is the legendary Celtics broadcaster, radio broadcaster?
Johnny Most.
I mean, there weren't...
There's a steal by my...
Burn it under the DJ, he lays it in. I mean, yeah, exactly.
Audacity, a crybaby, Jordan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, these guys, and if you're not Celtic fans, you can't stand them. But think about what life would be like when they're not there anymore. And that's what we don't have a lot in this society. We don't have those guys that are those home. I kind of like being a homer. You know what I mean? I don't feel like I'm a homer enough. Like, I mean, I can't, when my team stinks, it makes me so mad. I'm mad at them. These guys love their team so much and love their community so much. They can't get enough of it. And they can't do anything wrong. And I think we miss that stuff. So when we start to wish these people away, it drives me nuts with Vitale. Like, Dick Vitale can drive you crazy. I get it. But I follow these. I'm a big college basketball fan. We all know, you know. And I follow these little blog, their little Twitter pages and these Facebook pages that are like, I'm a Virginia basketball fan, so I follow these things. And the people get on these. I got rid of it because they really go after Dick Vitale. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? Like, I get it. Like, he's over the top. He loves Duke. You know, he loves North. You know, he loves the big schools, the historical big, you know, winning schools. But he is a legendary voice. I can't imagine.
He just loves the game.
He does, and I can't imagine not having him. Calling, even whether I agree with him or not, just not having that voice. And the same thing with John Sterling and Susie Waldman. I mean, they can drive you crazy and they do to a lot of people, but the voices are so iconic. It's like when Phil Rizzuto and Bill White left WPIX back in the day, I remember it was depressing. It was like that was a warm feeling listening to them call baseball games growing up in the summer. You know, and Bill, you know, Bobby Mercer, he got, you know, God bless him. He passed away from cancer not too long ago. But his voice on Yankee broadcasts, you know, there are just certain voices you hear that mean something. So don't wish these guys away, no matter how bad you think John Sterling's home run calls are. Everybody here knows that as soon as the Yankees have a new guy and there's a home run, you want to hear what he says. There's not one fan in the country that doesn't want to hear that. National shows play that stuff. They want to hear what these calls are. So it's a lot of pressure on them, too. Give them a break.
Well, also, Red Sox fans need to acknowledge that if the Yankees put anything other than a plank of wood in that seat, you're not going to like them because they're going to be the one calling every Yankees homer.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Let's get out of this segment.
All right. We're going to Austin doesn't like this segment. We're going to get to something else next. We'll be right back.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Earlier this week, my guy to my right here, Austin Danforth, sent me an interesting article from the New York Times. The article's called Sports Have Been on Pause. It's Time for a Reboot. Austin, my man, talk to us about this.
So, yeah, my buddy Tim up in Freeport, Maine, sent me this. And I was immediately like, oh, this is perfect for the show.
Yeah.
Basically, they had like their sports department sort of submit, looks like, ideas for ways to improve individual sports. you know, like little quirks of stuff that like where, I mean, you think about like baseball, the AL East, like you got the teams that are mostly in the Northeast and then whoosh, there's Tampa in the South. Like, do you need to have Tampa in the South? What could make things a little more cohesive, coherent? When you think about the Big Ten or the Big 12, and it stretches from Oklahoma to West Virginia, or
the ACC's like that. You got Louisville, the ACC, and the ACC.
Yeah, you got three states between Louisville and the ocean.
Yeah,
but they're part of the Atlantic,
right?
So stuff like that, you know. And so like basically, this piece goes through, you know, different ways you can improve sports: golf, soccer, baseball, football. Like, I mean, football, abolish kickoffs. You know, and then instead of onside kicks, you know, come up with like a 4th-and-20 or something like that from the you know, instances where you can regain possession or like just rethink it a little more smartly, a little more creatively. My big thing was always they devalued the kickoff. I don't want to get rid of it because I think, you know, like you can mishit a kick and then you can return it. And like there's a degree of strategy, but don't devalue it entirely where it's just a, you know, a touchback contest. I've always thought if you can kick it through the uprights, that's worth a point. If you can kick it accurately 75 yards or 85 yards or whatever it is from where they kicked through the uprights, that should be worth something. That's a skill, and that should affect the outcome of the game. So that wasn't part of the story, but I was curious what you guys, after looking over it, each of you thought like might have been like your favorite or least favorite or something you were like, yes, that's it, or no, God, no.
Well, so one thing that I didn't read here, but I wish the NFL would adopt is the way the college football does their overtimes. Mm. Like, I love the way college football does overtimes. I think they put the ball on the 25-yard line, right, of the other team. So you're 25 yards away from a touchdown. And that, I love that. I think that's one of the most compelling over. I don't know about you, but when I'm watching college football and they go overtime, I can't wait for it. I think it's one of the coolest. That would be great for the NFL. I agree.
It's like watching blackjack.
And you know, and I agree with you on that kickoff thing. If you, because I've always thought that too. Like some of these guys, if you ever go to a big time football game, the best thing for me during warmups is watching the kickers kick. I mean, watching field goal kickers kick field goals from 50, 55, 65 yards out, and watching punters doing the coffin corner trying to like, you know, pin the ball inside the 10-yard line is awesome to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, because you don't recognize how powerful their legs are and what they're able to do. I mean, I remember I can't wait to get to football games. I love watching the games, but watching those guys do that stuff is really compelling to watch.
And like, just, I mean, thinking with, like with kicking, and if a kickoff that went through the upright was worth a point, think about how coaches like Bill Belichick and, you know, guys that really think about the angles and ways to gain an edge. If you know you're going to kick off 4 to 6 times a game, or you might kick off that much, and that's an extra 3, 4, 5, 6 points you can put
touchdown
on the board that adds up over the course of, that becomes something worth doing.
I like it.
It would actually flip the strategy, because the way they've been doing kickoffs, the Patriots specifically, who do a lot of stuff on special teams, sort of get the edge, have been trying to coffin kick on kickoffs more often, and they would probably flip the script and start trying to kick it as deep and as hard as possible, try to get it through the upright every once in a while.
Yeah. And
it's
then those,
cool,
those 2-3 points.
Yeah, I like those.
Like,
that, so I agree with you. I agree with you.
Wait, Aaron, what stuck out to you?
So I thought this one was cool in the NBA. They were talking about the idea that sometimes there are commercials right at the end of a game and it cuts away from the momentum and the excitement. And so this one is a proposal that in the last 2 minutes of an NBA game, regular season, playoff, championship, whatever, no commercial breaks at all, nothing, no cutaway. So you would get these moments where you're watching as time runs down, there's a timeout, the guys are trying to figure out a play, 30 seconds left, you're not seeing a Coke ad, you're watching, you know, say it's back in the 90s, the heyday, you're watching Michael Jordan stand there and talk with Phil Jackson. I would much rather have that.
And I would say, I'll go back to my skin. I hated when you're watching the Bulls when they were doing the introductions and they would go to commercial. Because one of the best parts of the game was watching that and hearing that music start up and giving you the
music. Yeah, just, it puts the hair up on the back of your neck.
You know, I will say this. Back in the day, back in the mid-80s, early 90s, we had a satellite dish. And anyone that grew up in a house that had a satellite dish remembers that those were like giant dish. They were big. They looked like NASA dishes. And you could go from, you'd hit a button and it would move. And while it was moving, it would just be like,
yeah,
you know, it'd be, and then you get to it. I remember SATCOM 4, SATCOM. Yep. You go to different satellites. Yep. But back in those days, you could find, this is way before they figured out you better change this, you could find live feeds. So when they went to commercial, you could hear Brett Musburger and whoever, you know, you'd hear these people saying some crazy things, but you'd see everything. So if you saw like two players fighting in the huddle, you would see it. So that's kind of what that's like.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, live feeds were unbelievable. And there was about a 6-month period where I think satellite dishes were, people weren't grasping it, but the things that you heard and saw were unbelievable. One of the things I want to bring up is, you know, the baseball piece that he talked about. It's speed up the game for real.
Love that.
Yeah. Eliminate mound visits. I'm just going to read what he puts down. So eliminate mound visits, reduce warm-up pitches, stick to 2-minute gaps between innings, and keep batters in the box and pitchers on the mound. Okay, I'm game with stick to 2-minute gaps between innings. I'm fine with that. But eliminating mound visits and reducing warm-up pitches, I think reducing warm-up pitches can be dangerous to a player.
Yeah.
Eliminating mound visits and keeping batters in the box and pitchers on the mound, again, that takes away from what the game is. Now, I know everybody wants the game to be shorter. I get it. I guess I get it and I don't. Because to me, if you like baseball, you're watching the game. But watching guys go through their – like, for example, the reason batters get in and out of boxes is just, if you got a pitcher that's just mowing you down, you're trying to, like, break that momentum. Bernie Williams was good at that. Nomar Garciaparra was good at that. I mean, David Ortiz, remember him stepping out slowly, spitting in his glove, slapping his hands? Yeah. Do you want that to go away? No. That's their way. And then for pitchers, the same thing. Like, they've got to find their groove. They're trying to slow the game down or speed it up. I get that we want to speed it up, even though I don't, whatever. But I think all but the 2-minute thing is wrong.
So I thought that one goes hand in glove with the idea of bigger strike zone. So like you don't need to abandon mound visits and warm up pitches and like stepping out of the box if you are like adhering to like more strict time downtime between half innings. And if the strike zone is bigger, guys aren't wasting time looking at balls, fouling off pitches. Yeah. They're going to be either up or down or in play.
But let me ask you a question. But that goes to his enforce the strike zone as it is in the book, because that's not what they do. The strike zone in the book, I think, is letters to knees.
Yeah.
But what you see a lot of Major League Baseball is like belt to knees.
Yeah.
So that, I think that would, if the strike zone was the book, I think that would expand your strike zone.
And exactly. So expanding strike zone to what it is in the book would
what
speed up the
to
game.
Be. I totally agree. Totally agree. So I'm in with that one.
And then you could just widen the plate a little bit to expand it that way.
I don't think you need to expand the
I don't think you need to widen the plate. I think just more vertically, that would expand it enough.
Yeah. I got one that I thought was interesting. Yeah. I like untimed play as an alternative to the onside kick in football. I really like the idea of a 4th and 15 as an option instead of onside kicking. Because like those plays are so exciting, where it's all on the line, one play, the offense actually comes out, there's actually a legitimate chance that you could be smarter than the other team and take advantage and not have to give the ball back.
I think that would be awesome. A couple of the other no-brainer ones I thought of before we get into the ones you absolutely hate. I thought restricting the goalie pad size in hockey is fantastic. Like, have them big enough to be safe, but not so big that it turns goaltending into just a matter of angles and size. Like, if you fill up X amount of the goal and you know how to play at the angles properly, there it's less about reflexes and, you know, controlling stuff as it is just about getting in front of it. Like, I think that would be great. I also thought a couple of the ones with golf where, you know, like changing the format of events, because when you think about it, when you got 45, you know, golf PGA events a year, and it's all basically like one dude wins in stroke play, it gets boring. The little ones, little tournaments don't stand out against the big, like the majors. But if you have a couple where it's like blind draw, two-man best ball games, that would be wild. If you mix up the tours, as they suggest, where you have the LPGA players playing in the same tournaments with the men, either on teams or whatever, that would be electric to watch. I mean, they obviously play different tees. But, you know, ultimately, like, it would just mix it up that much more. It'd be fantastic.
And I will say that there's nothing better than the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup. Even if you're a passive fan, you just love that. So, right. I mean, and that's match play, and that's kind of, I agree with you there. I have to get to Adam and Williston, you know, on the Town Fair Terror texting. He said, the speed up, electronic strike zone and 20-second pitch clock. I mean, come on, Adam. Like, you and I must be on two different worlds, you and me. I mean,
we live in the same town,
but electronic strike zone, again, you have to have that human element in it. And as frustrating as it is when your favorite team gets struck out on the ninth inning when you got bases loaded and it's a 3-2 count and the pitch is 3 inches off the plate, but you can't have you got to have some type of human element in there. It can't always be perfect. And then the 20-second pitch clock, and I'm assuming that means meaning in between pitches has got to be off in 20 seconds. I mean, you know, all right. I just think you got to let baseball be baseball, you know, and maybe you have, but I don't mind the 2 minute clock in between innings. Yeah. Like you got to get in and out, hustle in, hustle out, get your warm-ups in and start playing.
So my other no-brainer was yes to bat flips.
Yeah, okay, but it's not yes, there's no not, you can't not do bat flips now.
Have everybody get over it.
Sit down,
embrace it.
But hold on a minute, guys. Don't you kind of like that though? That a batter gets up and does a Batista backflip, and then the next inning, you know, and then the pitchers are like, bit, you know, yelling at him, and then the next inning, the guy gets up and he's getting a, you know, that creates some tense, that some creates some intensity. The fact that that's kind of a rival thing, like you're not going to show me.
I'm not as about that as I am just the expression of joy for hitting a ball out of the park.
Oh no, I'm feeling it. But if you make it like, hey, you know, it's not a big deal. Like, I think it's cool that it is kind of a big deal to some pitchers because it adds that little bit of spice to the game.
I think where it becomes a problem is that there are enough batters who are still afraid of being hit by a fastball.
That's fine. That's what you make that choice. That's baseball's always policed itself, and that's what baseball's been.
So more bat flips. Before we get out, I want one that each of you absolutely hated.
No fighting in hockey.
Eliminate the DH.
Yeah, I hate that too. There's a lot that I hated.
Okay, that was easy. I want more that you hated.
Yeah, well, I mean, how do you take the? I mean, look, I understand we don't want to fight, but I mean, that's been part of hockey forever. Like, that's what I mean. That's hockey. You know what I mean? I mean, to ban it, it's like.
But is it necessary?
Probably not. But there's a lot of things aren't necessary. And I'm not, you know, you're not condoning violence here. But come on, I mean, no fighting in hockey. It's like. And let's be honest, like we're not, if people were like, nobody, you know, they're padded up and normally it has like a couple little pushes and then, you know,
it's
once in a while you get to that point, but very rarely do you see it come down to where gloves are off and there's like blood and people are losing teeth like that. It's just, you know, it's what hockey's been. But I'm with you on that DH thing. I don't know what he's talking about there. I'm with you on that. So my second thing is the DH, no DH. I like DH.
And my second thing is the fighting.
Look at us, Aaron. Wow. And you think, and how come I don't have my music yet? I mean, now you like me this much. How come I'm not getting my music? How about you? What do you dislike?
So, I love the idea about like limiting instant replay, but what I didn't like, a couple of the suggestions were like changing the format for like playoffs and tournaments and stuff, and I didn't totally love that.
Yep.
I didn't love the idea for like tennis. You only get one serve, not two. I don't like that either. I think that would alter the game too much.
And I would it would be really trouble for me on the tennis court too.
Well, it would turn it into kind of what golf has become, where it's just if you can hit it far, it doesn't matter.
Right, that's true. I agree with that.
The other no-brainer, I didn't get to it. Soccer should have an extra sub just for head injuries.
Oh yeah, I agree with that.
I don't think you want to have willy-nilly subs. I don't think you want five or six subs because it would devalue tactics. But one more sub. In case somebody has an, like, have those subs not count against you.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. Interesting article, man. That was a whole segment. I could have gotten to some things I didn't like either, but that's okay. All right, we'll be right back.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
What do we got this week, buddy?
This is Hot or Not. Hold on. I got to see if I can. I love these technical difficulties.
That's all right.
I'm trying to find the library, but everyone knows.
We are like one giant technical difficulty anyway, usually.
This, everyone knows, though, that Hot or Not is brought to you by Superb Cupcakes, and that really is the spot to get cupcakes. Oh my goodness. This one's really old. Basically, they are available for non-contact pickup.
Are you okay over there?
Everything going on?
I can't get to their phone number.
Oh, no.
Their phone number is 802-871-5941 for Superb Cupcakes in Williston. And I will just tell you that to poor Aaron's defense, like all the computers are down here and he's just trying to do all this stuff on the fly, but unbelievable, this place. They have, and today I'm going to give you what they're pushing today. Not only do they have delicious cupcakes for us, the peeps, but now they've got pup cakes going on. You should see these things, man. I mean, we've gotten them before for our dogs. They are, our dogs love them. Go, if you follow them on Super, if you follow them on Facebook, check them out today. They're like, they look like a regular cupcake with frosting and a little milk bone on top, just in case, you know, a guy like me sees that in the box and doesn't make the mistake that he's eating a dog cupcake. But yeah, unbelievable place. If you're looking for a place to give yourself a treat, you're looking for, you got an event coming up that, you know, that you want to bring something delicious, Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston is your place. Check them out.
Pat Mahomes signed the massive deal, as we all know, and his teammate Tyreek Hill had a comment on what that means for the team long term.
Chris Jones, he's definitely a man of his word. We're definitely creating something special here in KC, so I don't see why not. Why say five? Why not go 7 rings? Right now, we just chasing joy. So I'm going over 5, and I'm saying 7.
7 rings.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to say not, and they're not going to win another one. I'm going to tell you right now. I mean, I love Mahomes. I think he's the best player in football. I would pay money right now to watch him play. I think he's amazing. He's electric. And I love that guy. But they're not winning on the Super Bowl. And they are far from a dynasty. Stop putting this dynasty game on them. Stop playing this card that they're some
dynasty.
They've
won one.
Exactly. And they barely won it. They won late. Okay? Like, don't get me wrong. They're a great team. I was rooting for them. Like I said, love Mahomes. But this team's not going to win another Super Bowl. I'm just telling you. That's my prediction. I'm going to say under 1.
Yeah, like, he's being enthusiastic in the moment. I'm not going to hold it against him.
No.
And honestly, they should try and win that many. Like, that they're trying to capitalize on the moment. Like he said, chase joy, right? But 5 or 7? No. They would be well served to win 2 or 1. Hard.
Yeah, and I would just say that, you know, but there's been a lot of talk in the media, right, you guys, that they're talking about the team like it's the next juggernaut. No, this is the next New England Patriot run. I mean, it's just until it happens, I'm not going to believe it. So I won't wait to see.
You know what was funny is Tom Brady responded to this on social media saying that the Chiefs weren't the only team going for 7. And that kind of hurt, but at the same time, it was dope. I was like, yeah, oh, not with us.
yeah, exactly.
All right.
Yeah, man, at the end of an era there, that really is crazy, right?
Can we not talk about that yet?
Okay, sorry.
It hurts.
Well, if the Red Sox jab didn't get you, I got to get you with something.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
So the news this week's that preseason is canceled in the NFL, right?
Yeah.
That's the preseason news. Well, Colin Cowherd weighed in on that.
Preseason is a ripoff for players and it's a ripoff for fans. And I've never bought into the argument that the sport needs it. I'm not anti-rich guy, but you got to push back on the powerful. And in professional sports, owners have had the power for far too long. And now, strangely, due to COVID, players have some leverage. And they're getting rid of stuff that's always been a bad idea.
Oh, boy, Connor.
So okay. Well, preseason's unnecessary anyway.
All right, so I'm gonna say not, and I'm going to say it only because, look, there's two reasons. If you're looking at it from a fan's perspective, how many people right now, raise their hand, tell me you can't wait to watch the first quarter of your team play a preseason game? You just can't wait, because that's when you get to see your guys for the first time in a year. And secondly, for these fringe players that are trying, that may not be making an organization, but they're trying to catch on with somebody else, this is their dress rehearsal. So to say that it's not worth anything is you know, that it's ridiculous and it's all money grab by the owners is wrong. I think there are going to be a lot of players without, and again, the reason they're not having preseason this year is because of a reason of, you know, there's a health issue. But if you got rid of preseason games, there'd be a lot of professional football players that would be out of work if they didn't have that.
Well, and then the irony is that what the owners actually wanted was to get rid of some preseason games and add regular season games. So it's not like the preseason is their big plot to get more money. They don't even really like it that much. They just recognize that usually it's the coaching staff who would really like to have a preseason.
It's
obviously a blow developmentally for these teams that are trying to gel.
Yeah,
that's a legit thing. I think it is sad that they will sell tickets at or near regular season prices for a not regular season product. That's a bummer. I'm also I don't watch any of the preseason stuff really. I just don't. If I catch 2 drives of preseason football, that's I'm about maxed out there. I'm ready for it when it's ready to be a full-fledged product.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine, but at the end of the day, and I think when you watch preseason games, there's very few people there. They're not packed stadiums. So, I mean, you know, whatever they charge. I mean, I don't even know. I bought tickets to see a Giants game, and they definitely weren't the same price as they would be if I got a regular season game. I did it a few years ago. But I think for the players themselves and for the coaches, the other thing we didn't mention about that whole thing, Austin, is with the way that the training camps are formulated, there's not very much contact. And we've talked about how bad the product is early in the season. You know, you're going to take preseason games out completely. I mean, yeah. Colin has a lot of hot takes, but, you know, I don't get that one.
I mean, that is the thing. These are the first live reps of the year, and you don't want the first live reps of the year to count towards your record because they're usually bad. I mean, it's not really a natural human thing to go slamming your shoulder into people at 20 miles an hour. So yeah. That's something you got to, you know, and get you have, back
and
you, into.
And right. We all have to admit the first 4 or 5 weeks of the NFL is a terrible product. It's a terrible product. Tackling is bad. Everything's bad. You know, and that's not anything on the players. It's just that they're not allowed. They don't. There's nothing in training camps. Now you're going to take these games away. It's a lot of reasons why you got to have preseason. Maybe one less game. I get that, but
yeah, four might be a bit much.
Yeah,
but zero is not really what you're looking for.
I agree.
All right, the Pats should run Cam more often than Carolina did. This comes from Nick Wright.
Something that happened with Cam later in his career in Carolina was with what I think was the understandable but unnecessary concern about we're worried about Cam long term. They tried to move away somewhat from what always made Cam so special, to preserve him for years down the road. The Patriots, with respect to Cam, are not concerned about Cam in 2023. They have him under contract for 1 year as a trial to see. I understand why you are and Cam might be, but Cam has never been one that said, I gotta run less.
If we got him, use him how he's best used. And if that's, you know, running it, you know, 10 times a game, 8 times a game, 12 times a game, like, do it. Like, what, like, it, like, anytime you have a mobile quarterback who could stay healthy, it keeps defenses honest. That works to your advantage.
I mean, I'm going to just defer to Bill Belichick. If Bill Belichick wants to run him, he runs him. If he doesn't want to run him, he doesn't run him. I mean, I don't know. And this guy, what's his name? Nick Wright?
Yeah.
Whew, that guy.
Yeah, he bugs me.
not my guy.
What I don't agree with was this idea that Carolina was holding Cam back from that because they wanted to preserve him. I think it was because the last half of his career in Carolina, he was always playing hurt. And you don't want to take a guy who's already got a busted up playing shoulder or ankle or knee or whatever and run them into the ground.
And do we know that he's even healthy? I mean, do we even know if he's healthy enough to handle that type of... I mean, we don't know that yet. There has been so many injuries to him that he just might... He might be the best you've ever seen because he's going to become a pocket passer now, right? I mean, maybe that's what he should have been the whole time, but he's a big, strong, fast guy and he's put his head in there a lot.
I like the idea of him as a pocket passer, and if he has the wherewithal to maybe have two designed runs a game and tuck it another 2 to 5 times a game, that's going to be better for the offense. I think that's fine.
And you know he can run.
Yeah.
But this just having that mentality in there. So for my boy Adam over here from Wilson, like that's a Daniel Jones type guy. We know he can run. So he gets out of the pocket. He can make something happen. We know that with Cam Newton. You know, it's like Daniel Jones.
It's a little
Cam,
bit different.
Daniel Jones, Cam Newton. One hand washes the other. You know what I mean? come on. I'm just kidding.
Oh, man. But, I mean, it's something Cam's been able to do his whole career is throw out of the pocket. It's not like he was a run-only quarterback. He's capable of both. If he's healthy enough to run, I think he'll do it. If he's not, I think the Pats will either bench him because he's not healthy or play him more conservatively.
See Bill Belichick. Whatever he decides is right.
Yeah.
Period. Right, Austin? That's your guy.
Yeah. I love how you're in Bill We Trust, too.
I love it. Now you have to tell me. Bill Belichick's the greatest coach ever to live. And I'm frustrated with the Giant ownership letting him leave back in the 80s, in the early 90s.
Still frustrated.
I'm disgusted with it. What George Young did to the Giants is ridiculous.
What's the next one? We got to get off this topic.
You got Bill Belichick. I got Ray Hanley. Okay, what else do I got to tell you? Let's move on.
All right. Colin Cowherd is back again. Says Mookie Betts' contract is great.
Mookie Betts to the Dodgers is a great contract. Gerrit Cole to the Yankees. Those are great contracts. They're nightmare contracts for anybody else. Completely limiting. In fact, with the Dodgers and the Yankees, the only question is from the ownership groups, do you feel like spending the money? You got it. And when I look at the Mookie Betts deal, I'm like, $350 million, $30 million a year, 12 years, Mookie Betts? They figured it out. They got nothing but money. It's part of the culture like the Yankees in New York. From the cable deal to the attendance to what they charge to the parking, it makes complete, utter, total sense. And the Dodgers have shown a reluctance to just hand over big money deals. There's a reason they did. This makes total sense.
Okay, I mean, yeah.
If you've got it, spend it.
Yeah, isn't that the point?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a great deal for the Dodgers. They're trying to win a championship. I think the Alex Rodriguez deal with the Yankees is a perfect example of why it's not going to look good at the end of the contract. We get that. But again, if the Dodgers win a couple World Series, it's completely, you win a World Series, it's probably worth it, right? I mean, the Dodgers haven't won a World Series since what, the 80s? So yeah, I mean, it's worth it if they win a World Series.
So,
sure.
I think this is where Coward really didn't say it, but the business theory behind both those deals too is what adds value, where you're not just getting a good player, you're getting a good player from a contender caliber team.
Yep.
So the Yankees getting Gerrit Cole from Houston, you're taking away an asset that a team that's trying to beat you had. The Dodgers getting Mookie Betts from Boston, you're taking away an all-star caliber asset from a team that could knock you out of the World Series and did 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That's good business.
Yeah, and I agree with that too.
Along that same vein, you're also keeping him from going anywhere else for the next 12 years. So exactly. He's not going to end up in the NL anywhere else.
I just promise you, in year six, the Dodgers are going to be hoping and wishing he was playing somewhere else. I'm just going to tell you, the last 6 years,
not
that's
impossible.
Not going to be a lot of fun.
That's the way a lot of those long contracts
I've
go.
I've seen this already. I've seen this play out. I know how it's going to go.
In his mind's eye, he already sees an old
Mookie
Betts.
I'm a Yankee fan. We had Alex Rodriguez for like 600 years. I mean, what do you want me to tell you? His contract was forever, and it was ridiculous money.
The first 300 of them.
I was all right for the first like 250. And then after that, we're off that. All right, that's Hot or Not for the day. Good job. We've come back and tie a bow on the show. Don't go anywhere.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Kurt Wright just texted, the host of WVMT's The Morning Drive. He just texted me and said, hey, you didn't mention Robinson Cano's contract. Don't you know? By the way, now batting for the Yankees, number 24, Robinson Cano. I always love saying that, okay? But when he left the Yankees, he signed in Seattle. That's another perfect example of a contract that the Seattle Mariners were in and that they just couldn't wait to get out of. That's just another perfect example of that. So these long contracts, I'm telling you, they're rugged. They're really rugged. Hey, the Green City Garage poll question today. Green City Garage, the question today was, will you get the pay-per-view to watch 54-year-old Mike Tyson fight again? What were the results, Aaron?
I found this surprising. The results were 93% no.
Wow.
Wow. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? You're not interested in watching Tyson fight again? I don't know how that's not intriguing.
I guess on some level it is like two middle-aged men fighting. Like, is that fun? Yeah, is that interesting or sad to see?
I don't know. I think Mike, I mean, if you've seen pictures of Tyson, I mean, he is jacked again. I mean, he has been working out. I mean, I think it's just, I just think it's going to be amazing to see a 54-year-old guy get back out there. And he was an icon, right? I mean, to me, Mike Tyson was the face of boxing. I mean, you know, boxing went through like its heyday, right? And then we had like these years that it wasn't very good. And then Mike Tyson kind of comes in and it's you know, it's a show again. I mean, back in the day with George Foreman and obviously way back with Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. I mean, there was nothing like watching a Muhammad Ali fight. Now, it was way before me, but Mike Tyson, watching those fights were just unbelievable. And to see him come back, I can't believe there wouldn't be more people interested in watching him fight.
And just the fact that they asked him why and he was like, because I can. Like, that alone gets me so excited. He's still got the fire in him.
I mean, what was the guy from USC that fought a couple years ago?
McGregor.
McGregor and who did he fight? He fought
Mayweather.
Oh, Mayweather. Yeah. I couldn't wait to watch that. I was so intrigued by it. It wasn't even entertaining, but I wanted to see it. That's kind of how I feel about seeing Mike Tyson fight. But hey, maybe I'm the minority on this.
No,
one.
No, I'm with you.
Oh, good. Finally.
I hate pay-per-view, though.
Yeah, I know. I hope it's not too much. All right, guys, that's Sports Saturday for the week. Have a great weekend. Enjoy it. We're back again next week. Have a great one.